Hello and welcome back to Radio Rothbard. I'm Ryan McMakin. I'm a senior editor with the Mises Institute. And with me today is my associate editor, Tho Bishop. And it's January 6th, at least as of this recording. And so Tho reminded me it's the one-year anniversary of the Capitol riot, break-in, unauthorized tourism event, or coup, if you want to call it that, I suppose. The worst thing that's happened since Pearl Harbor in America, according to some people. So I thought it'd be good. We could commemorate the one-year anniversary and talk about where we are now in terms of attitudes about the January 6th event and what people are saying and maybe what effects it'll have on American ideology and policy going forward, if any. So, Tho, how you doing?
Doing great, but shame on you, Ryan, for not having this date just seared into your psyche after everything that, this great trauma that we all suffered as a people.
Well, you know,
last year.
Well, of course, January 6th is Epiphany, right? Like one of the most ancient Christian holidays, like second century sort of stuff. And so, yeah, when someone mentions January 6th, my mind does not exactly go to something that happened in Washington, D.C. in 2021. But I guess in America, we're so culturally impoverished that all of our important calendar dates have something to do with some political event. So, fine. I guess I should be thinking about this more. And so what should I be thinking about it, though? I mean, I keep up with the headlines a little bit, right? This is not exactly a topic that I choose to make something that I have expertise in. But I do see the headlines, and I see that there's stuff going on with this. I saw that the president gave some sort of speech about it. I saw that Tom Daschle said that that January 6th was a result of disinformation, and that this disinformation, i.e., things me and my friends don't agree with, is the most horrible thing unleashed on America since the world went nuclear. That's some comment I read of his today. It's like it's the most dangerous thing since nuclear weapons is, I guess, some sort of like Russian meme on Facebook. And of course, we've all heard it's the worst thing since 9/11. It's the worst thing since Pearl Harbor. So I'm looking around. First of all, the people I talk to on a regular basis who tend to not be terribly political people, nobody ever brings this up. No one ever talks about this one way or the other. So it just makes me think of the phenomenon when I used to work at the state capitol in Colorado. You'd get up in the morning, you'd go down to the capitol, and then people would be talking all day at the capitol about this fiscal crisis. This is like the year 2001 or so. It's a fiscal crisis. How will the state ever deal with this fiscal crisis? And I remember talking to my colleague and saying, have you ever encountered anyone outside of this building who talks about the fiscal crisis or cares about the fiscal crisis? And of course, the answer was no. So I wonder if January 6th is sort of the same thing, or are what you're seeing is that there is definitely a faction of people on maybe the Marjorie Taylor Greene side of things that are pretty worked up about it. I don't know. What's your reading?
Well, I do think there's a few different camps out there. One is on one side of it, I think there's kind of a similar dynamic that's going on to a certain extent with Omicron now. You have, a portion that is not particularly motivated on the other side. They might have even been anti-Trump last year and saw the entire thing as a disgusting spectacle or something like that. But they're also kind of moved on with their lives. Similarly, you have a lot of people that, no longer wrapping their entire life around the virus. They might not question whether Fauci was involved or have any sort of larger end goal there. It's just that they're kind of moved on. On the other side of it, though, is that there's an element of particularly I think the Democratic Party looking ahead to elections later this year, that kind of see ramping this stuff up as a way of distracting from, $4 gasoline, right? Like, there's an element here where there is a, they're pinning their political hopes to you know, the dangerous threat of Orange Man coming back. You know, this was a terrorist attack on our, you know, the state religion of democracy. And that, you know, if we don't care about this now, then, you know, the terrorists have won, right? And I don't think that works. I think there's a divide. Again, putting aside just for a second, the conservative response, the Tucker Carlson response of things, even amongst, you know, again, moderate Democrats and, you know, the activist base, the movers and shakers in D.C., you know, I don't think they care. Because, again, there's so many things in people's lives going on right now. You know, a few you know, members of Congress being really, really scared a year ago, it doesn't really matter if, you know, their kids are, you know, have now been locked out of school again for 2 weeks in Chicago, right? And so there's this dramatic disconnect between what the Democratic Party wants people to believe and the actual day-to-day experiences of a lot of people. I think it's kind of, you know, growing this, you know, a lot of the political trends in a much broader sort of sense.
Yeah, I think you're right. It definitely seems to be part of a electoral effort in that you're just like, why are they harping on this so much? And I think you're right. I think they think it'll win them some elections. But seems like the sort of thing that only true believers, that like, you know, skinny white people on Twitter who spend all their day like posting pictures of people who have COVID or something, that they're really worked up about it. But that's not real life, right? This is a tiny minority of the population. And so I just in my dealings with regular people, I don't encounter it hardly at all. And yeah, to really try and cast this, first of all, it was always ridiculous, right, to try and cast it as some sort of coup. I wrote this at the time, right? This, it's silly to think this is a coup. It only seems like a coup if you're one of these Americans who is completely unaware of anything that's ever happened in any other country or in any other time period. And so I guess maybe this is how you imagine coups happen in Latin America or something like that. Some unarmed, casual observers storm the Capitol. Quote-unquote storm. Of course, that's not how it happens at all. Consider like the 1973 Chilean coup, right? We're talking about like jets strafing a building with machine guns and stuff. That's what real coups are. So that was always silly. And then just this attempt to now use democracy as sort of this term that's just means everything that we like. I mean, talk about a term that has like no actual meaning anymore. And now they're saying that this is some sort of like strike at the heart of democracy and it's a threat to our democracy. And I'm seeing the headlines kind of poke up everywhere saying that sort of thing. There's something with Jimmy Carter today about how the country's divided over things like January 6th and that's a threat to democracy. It's all just so vague. So it just seems like the usual tribalism, right? Hey, look, these people you don't like or who don't look like you did this thing and they were trying to overthrow the country and boy, it's a good thing they're in jail now. And don't you forget about it, because now democracy's failing, and vote for us or else Orange Man will be president again. And then it'll be just like 9/11. That seems like a weird train of thought to follow and too hard to follow. And as you say, who has the bandwidth for that, right? Like, I got like kids getting ready to go away to college. I got bills to pay. I got lots of troubles and fretting about the future of what might happen if Trump becomes president again. In terms of people storming the Capitol. First of all, that's not going to happen again, right? I mean, so logistically, that's no problem. And secondly, it's so overblown and so pointless. I have a hard time caring about it at all. So I don't see how anybody other than like the hardcore sort of Twitter left can care about it either.
Well, and I think this is a very, very good thing. Like, if anyone out there is looking for a white pill, I mean, I don't think there's anything that speaks more highly of, you know, the anti-political cause than the fact that there is an element of this sort of progressive mindset that requires people to be political animals, like entirely, right? And so yeah, they always want you geared up to whatever the frequency is and really, really mad at the things that you know, they're supposed to be really, really mad about and scared about the things that you're supposed to be really, really scared of. But ultimately, for a lot of the public, not all, for a lot of the public, you know, again, we have our daily lives, you know, there is almost a, you know, there's a slumming to laziness has its own sort of form of resistance on like COVID tyranny, right? And you know, that's not a bad thing. This is a good part of just, you know, humans being humans and you know, something that's kind of fighting off some of the greater excesses of, I think, the particularly loonier aspects of kind of the modern progressive movement. The other side, though, is I think that while that is a very, very good thing, I think, or something to at least, you know, a positive thing about society, I think there is, it would be a mistake, however, to completely dismiss this as the self-indulgent fantasies of Washington, D.C. and, you know, elites that look like the Hunger Games. I think that there is, on the other side, a very sinister and very dangerous aspect here, where, you know, they are trying to ingrain within the civic narrative a very specific myth, right? That the myth of the coup, you know, the myth of Trump supporters overthrowing democracy, all that sort of stuff, but in a serious way, and trying to use this to threaten, as the justification for new, you know, war on terror sort of style tactics, like we've already seen this past year, kind of the broadening of the Capitol Hill police presence, things like that. And so there's this other element, though, where as absurd as the DC portrayal is, there is a significance to it in terms of what it means the state is indicating it might do in the future and the justifications it will use to do both.
Yeah, I think when we look beyond the politics and into the policy, yeah, that's stuff to be concerned about, right? Because this is just, it has very much the same flavor of 9/11, which, I mean, part of the tragedy of it all is that they're trying to compare this to a thing where thousands of people died. And that was used, of course, to pass through some of the worst legislation ever. The Patriot Act, TSA, all sorts of horrible things that have occurred over the last 20 years, not to mention two failed wars. But it seems that rather than making war on some foreign country and spying on foreign nationals in the U.S., that, yes, you're right. It looks like this the left wants to use now to institute a Patriot Act aimed at all Americans and to institute basically a war on the U.S. and anyone, therefore, who even expresses some doubts about, say, the legitimacy of elections, which, of course, is a totally legit thing to do throughout all of history, to ask good questions about elections, the idea that they're all not, of course, they're sound and sacred and wonderful. That's a naive idiocy. At that, those people are then villainized. And the media doesn't even attempt to be impartial on that, because they won't say so-and-so claims that this election thing happened or that happened. They say falsely says that. So the whole way that articles are written has totally changed in recent years, where quote-unquote journalists are really all just columnists who are saying, well, this is true, that's not true. They're not, and that's their own interpretation. They're not even actually asking people for quotations or trying to do any real legwork on presenting information to the reader. They're just saying, this is the truth, and this is an untruth that you should not believe, dear reader. And so that all feeds in. It's the same sort of hysteria that, yeah, we encountered after 9/11, and I suppose people under, I don't know, how young do you have to be to not remember that stuff?
A lot of Zoomers probably these days.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, Zoomers, of course, right? If you're born in 2010 or something, you don't remember that stuff. Or even if you were born in 2001, all right, you probably don't remember that stuff right then. The tenor is very much the same. And so, yeah, I agree. That's extremely dangerous. And you want to see what they want for the people they consider to be enemies of democracy is just look at the people rotting in jail now who were in the January 6th riot. Is a lot of those people who are, of course, no harm, who present zero threat to their communities at large, right? They go back to their communities and they're no threat to anybody or anything, most of them. They, of course, will be sure and mention 100 times if they did find some sort of thuggish person in the group. But the vast majority of those people are just powerless in almost every way. But we're supposed to be deeply afraid of these people. And so we're supposed to give them long prison sentences and be very, very afraid. And that's exactly what we were all being threatened with in 2002, was that, hey, look, we're passing all these new laws. If you see something, say something. Turn in your neighbor. If your neighbor's disloyal, maybe he's a friend of terrorists. And it's that sort of thing. Except now, instead of being a friend of some foreign terrorist, maybe you're a friend of some Trumper who denies the validity of our elections. And so those people must be stopped. And yeah, and they don't want to stop you with kind words and encouragement to be different. No, that they would love to jail you. And that seems to be the end goal here. The question is, how much will they be able to get away with it? Thankfully, America is deeply, deeply divided. So it's unlike after 9/11, when unfortunately America was not divided. And that's when the worst things happen, when the country is not divided. So I'm hoping that a lot of this stuff they'll try to pass through will just never see the light of day. But they definitely want it.
Well, it is concerning the degree to which, I mean, like, there's nothing I think more, there's the scenario that nothing best embodies like a dystopian story, right? Then when, you know, the family is snitching on, you know, the dissident or whatever, you know, the target is. And like, and that's literally the culture that the FBI was able to cultivate with this thing. Like, there was a percentage of the population, particularly, again, this is the degree to which, again, if we're looking at the people that are more likely to be susceptible to this hyper politicalization, every action kind of driven by the party. You know, I think the university system and the indoctrination from there is you know, perhaps the most fertile territory to look at. You know, you had a lot of, you know, college age kids, you know, turn in the uncle because they saw him in a FBI tweet, you know, wearing a Trump hat. And there's an aspect of that is deeply upsetting. I think another aspect of it too, just to show how serious of business they mean, like it would have been one thing to, for example, just throw these, you know, to push serious but charges, but through a normal, you know, judicial system, right? The same way that the people that you know, bombed the limo during Trump's inauguration and all that sort of chaos that happened there, you know, they were arrested, they were thrown in jail, they were released. I think the charges for most of them were dropped later on. Surprise, surprise. In this case, though, they didn't run them through the normal booking system. I mean, like they literally were putting them in jails with obscene conditions, hidden from like congressional transparency. I mean, like, they were being treated aesthetically. I mean, the full war criminal treatment, which is just so over the top, almost to be like, you know, you don't think it'd be like self-defeating. Like it makes it look a lot worse than what they probably could have gotten away with otherwise. But that's an aspect as well. Like there is an extreme edge here that is showing itself. And I think what's exciting is the degree to which you see, you know, it's called the American right more broad, you know, just generally. I mean, particular ideological niche within there necessarily, but like even your average Fox News viewer, your Tucker Carlson fan, like that's the narrative explicitly being pushed out of the time slot that used to be Bill O'Reilly. And I think that's something that's really interesting when we're, you know, getting a sense for how this current political environment is going to adjust to, you know, what the state really is. I think this is some very optimistic stuff. As horrible, you know, because of the degree which it shows the horrors of the state, I think this is a very positive development in terms of a lot of people's understanding of the state.
Yeah, I think it was fairly easy to just forget about it after 9/11 and think it was just happening to somebody else and it wouldn't affect you. And
I'm not Muslim.
And right, exactly. And I was born in America. So what can they do? Of course, Obama droned a couple of American citizens without any sort of trial or tribunal. So that was a new thing. That was upsetting. But for the most part, you know, you're a white guy, you're born in America, you'll be fine, right? But this has really helped show just how repressive and vindictive the left can be. It's like a Sacco and Vanzetti sort of thing, right? There's anarchists hiding behind every barnyard wall, and they're looking to bomb you and shoot you and spread chaos in America. And and destroy, you know, good American democratic values. And whereas usually, I mean, the myth you learn in school is that it was always the right wing that was freaking out about dissidents and that sort of thing. I don't know whether you want to call it the left or whatever. I don't know what you want to call it. But these people from the regime who are freaking out about January 6th, yeah, they I can see very little difference between them and the sort of people who in, say, the 1890s were sure that the sinister forces of communism and anarchism were everywhere and were going to tear the nation apart, and that we needed a whole lot more in terms of the cops and the Pinkertons and everybody to really clamp down on that all. That's what the Democratic Party is doing right now. And so that's an interesting development. And so, yeah, sinister, it's dangerous. But you're right. It is prompting some significant pushback, I think. And people are just coming right out and saying it. I mean, boy, I couldn't imagine people saying the sorts of dissident things in, say, 2003 or 4, like they're saying now, in terms of just disparaging the regime, in terms of acting skeptical about what they're being told, in terms of just basically saying, you know, shrug off these idiots. We don't believe anything they say. It's all corrupt. It's all garbage. This is a very new thing. It of course, as you know, we probably haven't seen this sort of thing since the 19th century. It did exist then, but somehow we all became a united nation and learned to love each other for a while, which of course allowed the state to become huge and repressive far beyond anybody might have imagined in the 19th century. But maybe some people are really now starting an actual movement that is willing to call it what it is. As you say, it's even on the mainstream TV stuff. Now, of course, I don't really quite agree with the flavor of it, but I think it does count as real dissent and not just sort of a milquetoast fake version of the controlled opposition. I think these people really are starting to believe that the whole thing is not legit.
Two of the leaders on that, like within Congress itself, has been Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. And what's interesting, I was watching some of their, like, one of the things that is interesting about their approach for today rather than the other Republicans is that a lot of the other Republicans were just kind of ignoring the entire thing entirely, right? They're just kind of, I'm not going to feed the absurdity, but, you know, I'm not going to try to, you know, make a spectacle of it. You know, they've really focused on the allegations of, you know, the Fed itself, you know, FBI operatives, members of the state infiltrating the, when people got to the Capitol building, placing them as responsible for a lot of the, you know, the original push into the building itself, which coupled with the way that the police officers there were kind of like letting people go without a lot of force. You know, you had a lot of people that were kind of just following the lead on that. Like, to actually, for one, you know, use that position to call it out. Again, there's this great quote by Matt Gaetz. There is a pattern recognition here. When they want to seize power illegitimately, the first thing they do is seed a lie. Then they use that lie to justify what would otherwise not be justified. Now they're lying about January 6th so that when you see America First groups get together, when you see the Pepes back online, when you see people rallying and organizing like the Tea Party in the midterms, they can use the power of government to stop people from taking the power back. That's what this whole thing is about. Like, I think that sort of subversive narrative of, you know, highlighting the realities of a regime desperate to keep itself in power, right? I mean, we have seen time and time again, you know, since the Bush years, the way that we have used the FBI, you know, that the FBI has infiltrated itself into groups like this to have them perform things they otherwise would not do, right? This is the standard MO. You know, having that come from a sitting congressman is something that, again, if we're looking for optimistic ways in which people are going to, or are starting to view the state itself for what it is, it's funny. Last night, there's a online streaming show called Timcast, and one of the viewers in the audience paid money to have Tim Pool ask Marjorie Taylor Greene if she had ever read Murray Rothbard's Anatomy of the State. Surprise, surprise, she had it. But like this focus here on legitimacy and things like that. I think she would kind of get something out of if they did. Like, I think that they are touching upon, I think, you know, that Rothbardian understanding of the state will always punish those that undermine its perceived legitimacy amongst the people. Like, that's kind of what we're getting close to here. And again, it is interesting to see the evolution of conversation on this on the right.
You know how those adorably naive people like send copies of the Constitution to their congressmen and stuff? We should send them copies of Anatomy of the State. That would be
there you go.
That'd be a much better read. Something they might actually get something out of. And maybe something they would actually do something about, since, of course, the Constitution, you know, there's really nothing you can do with it at this point because nobody cares. Nobody's paying attention to it. But it's very refreshing to see members of Congress trash institutions like the FBI and such. And you're right. It's not going away. And I think January 6th, and by this not going away, I mean this movement toward finally realizing the true nature of organizations like the CIA and the FBI and those organizations that we were calling the deep state back in 2019. Now, of course, those of us who are Rothbardians and such have had contempt for these organizations for decades. But even as late as 2015 and so on, you'd have lunch with one of these sort of mainstream libertarian types, and they were all in on what heroes the CIA was, and everyone at the FBI is a wonderful human being, and you just don't hear that much anymore, and certainly not from the rank and file. You might still hear it from the rich old sort of quote-unquote leaders of the movement and stuff who haven't lived in reality for a long, long time. But for most people, boy, they seem to have figured out, right, that the FBI is here to serve the FBI's interests, that the CIA is clueless, that any number of things going on behind the scenes seem to have the fingerprints of these organizations all over them, and that really it's about scheming in D.C. and has approximately zero to do with keeping you safe. So I'm seeing more and more of that. You're starting to see even people at like Claremont saying things like abolish the CIA and stuff like that. And I think that's all comes out of sort of the Trump years and also the January 6th thing, because the reaction has been so harsh. And the FBI, which, right, it seems every time they get an important case, they fumble it. And the one I can just think of at the moment is with the gymnasts, the Olympic gymnast thing, where they're like, hey, we told you about this guy that was sexually abusing all these children. The FBI was, oops, you know, we're too busy. We can't deal with stuff like sexual abuse. Oh, but your grandma who accidentally walked into the lobby on January 6th at the Capitol, well, we're going to destroy her. And we are going to take her down. So I think people are starting to see what the FBI is really about. And that's fantastic. That's great. The sooner these organizations are treated with the contempt they deserve, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's definitely a product of the last 4 years, at least bringing it mainstream. I think it's interesting. I always feel like the best part of the right, at least for a long period of time, yeah, there was almost like that Bircher sort of culture that was just like inherently against like the UN. And I remember seeing a truck in my community that had like a keep your police local. Like there was kind of this almost this Jacksonian just sort of skepticism of big generally. That's not always the most nuanced, lens to work for things on. Like, you know, they get some details wrong here and there or whatever. But it's just like it's kind of recognizing that there's something just not right about, large concentrations of even police power, even with the badge, that little bit of good old boy, outlawish country sort of style, that's something that I've always grown up with, and it's interesting seeing that take over the cultural foundation of the Republican Party. Over like the yacht club crowd, right? Like, yeah, they've always kind of voted the same, but in terms of the ones that are active, it's you've got that twist now, and I think that's kind of a a reflection of the environment we're in.
I do think we do have to work, though, to keep that attitude going, because I just now that you mentioned the Birchers, right, I'm reminded that back in the early 90s, there was a small minority that was starting to get a clue on that. And thanks to people like Jim Bovard's book, and you, of course, had the massacre in Texas. What was the Branch Davidians, the massacre there? And there was Ruby Ridge, where federal agents murdered some people. And I think people did see just how capricious and unconcerned with actual justice federal agents are there. But that was a real small minority, even though you did have, I think, the leader of the NRA at the time called federal agents jackbooted thugs. That was a thing. And in which case George H.W. Bush tried to distance himself from that, which just shows you how useless that guy was. But that was just wiped away and melted away with 9/11. And then suddenly federal agents were all heroes that kept us safe again. And so that didn't grow from that sort of nascent skepticism that did exist in the early 90s. It retreated. And so I guess we have to somehow ensure that the current skepticism is maintained, because the last thing we want is to everybody to wake up to in a bad way to some new woke reality and decide, oh, you know what? I guess the regime was right all along, and these people are just good people, and they're just trying to do the right thing, which has happened before, where progress was being made and then it went into reverse, probably usually because there was some foreign threat that the regime was able to convince everybody existed, and so on. But going forward, so I don't know what that means or what has to be done in that case, because obviously we're saying the same thing now we've always said about those sorts of organizations, at the Mises Institute at least. But do you what do you think is going to happen this year? Like, give me some predictions for 2022, and then will things change after the election? Will they kind of drop it, or will they try to keep getting mileage out of this?
What they do going forward is going to be interesting. I do think you will likely, I could see them trying to do some high profile arrests. I could see them seeing, because you have this January 6th commission out there. I think that they are going to increasingly run out of tools that they can use to control the news cycle. And I think a very high profile grilling of Steve Bannon or some of these people would give them the TV. Like, you know, if you have no other tool that you can use, then, you know, rather than having inflation headlines like play out over, you know, evening television, I could see them doing that in particular. I think ultimately, though, it's not going to pay off. I think one of the things that's interesting, though, is, you know, considering, you know, does this interesting new right take over the Republican Party? Because right now, they are not, right? The Republican Party, infrastructure-wise, the majority of federal offices, it is still the Bush Party, right, in terms of their ideology. This is going to be a primary situation where I think you could see a lot of these newer, bolder sort of Republicans win some of those battles. And I think that's going to be a lot more interesting than, say, the general election results in the midterms, because I guess what? Surprise, surprise, Republicans are going to win. Who cares? If Kevin McCarthy is Speaker of the House, who cares? Yeah, you're going to end up, you know, having, you know, the House and you know, White House and whatever, Congress going against each other. It's going to be like the end of the Obama years. I have no, you know, the Republicans aren't going to do anything too aggressive. It is what it is. But if they can start, if there is a move in the primaries, if, for example, someone who isn't Greg Abbott wins the governorship of Texas, I think that's a huge, huge deal. It's like those are some of the battles that I think within that, you know, the battles going on in the right specifically. And I think that with where issues like this are pushing the electorate there, I think that would bode well for a more radicalization of that party. And if that is the case, I think that, again, that would be a positive trend to look for going forward. If we see the opposite happen, and you know, Kevin McCarthy never has more power and Abbott blows out the guy and all this sort of, you know, Teal's people loses these Senate primaries and things like that, then I think that would perhaps show a resiliency of the status quo Republican types and could lend itself to, you know, seeding this ground like you're worried about there.
All right. Well, we'll have to let that be the final word here on this episode of Radio Rothbard. For those of you listening in, thank you for joining us, and we'll be back again in the near future for another episode. And until then, we'll see you next time.